Okay, welcome once again to another Throttle Up Radio Show and Podcast, and I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith, and I'm glad to be here along with my great audio engineer. And we are back from a very short vacation. Now, we are in the midst of a special series, but before I get into that, a couple of administrative items. We are a radio show on Red Sea Talk Radio. We're also a podcast on all podcast platforms that we're aware of, so you can find us pretty much anywhere. And I did mention Red Sea Talk Radio, didn't I? Yes. A weekend show. Did I say that? No, I'm not sure I did. Weekend show. Saturdays and Sundays on both channels. You can check for the times exactly. And so, let's get right into this show. It's kind of exciting. We are dealing with issues that relate to the subject of this long series of programs that we're putting together. It's called Think Like a Fighter Pilot. We do have, by the way, a new book out. I want to plug that one as well. It's called The Sonic Warrior Chronicles of a Top Gun Pioneer. And that basically is my experience as a naval aviator and Navy fighter pilot during the early supersonic era of aerial combat. So, anyway, so let's get right into this show. I'm going to have my great audio engineer read me a question for today in which I will address myself to it. I think this is going to be pretty unusual, and I believe a kind of a fascinating show. We are we're going to be plowing some new ground here that I would say is may very well be the first to open up this realm of reality for discussion. So let's get right into it. My audio engineer is going to read me the question for this show.
Okay, hi Kevin, and hello to your listening audience. Okay, your question for today: can you explain how the poem High Flight fits into your ideas about thinking and reasoning under conditions of increased time compression?
Okay, yes, I'd be more than happy to do that. I am, by the way, addressing myself to this subject in, did I mention my Substack? I did not mention that. Okay, so we have, you know, on Substack, what is Substack? It is a platform? Yeah, so Substack is a platform for authors, basically, and you write short articles on a regular basis, and we have a Substack account, and it's called, it's actually the account that we have on Substack, it's called Velocity, and we were addressing ourselves to this very question on that Substack platform as well. And so, yes, That's a great question, and what the way I want to address this is take a look at, let's say it's a situation or a problem statement that we have in the field of aviation. And now I don't actually know if this is the first time that this has ever been discovered outside of aviation. I do know that the medical profession has followed along with aviation in certain areas of human performance. I'm going to say that aviation uncovered this problem. What is the problem? The problem is, how do you perform well under conditions of increased time compression? Now, what exactly does that mean? All right, so I'm going to give you a very, very short tutorial on that. It's not going to last more than a minute or two. What do we mean by increased time compression? And that happens when you are moving along at a very high velocity and you actually don't have a lot of time to do anything. Okay, you don't have any relaxed time at all. Things are moving along quickly. You have to be up and ready. Your mind has to be sharp and agile and quick-witted and so forth and so on, particularly if you're moving at speeds that approach or exceed the speed of sound. Now, when you get to the speed of sound, that is the point at which atmospheric compression occurs. What is that? That means that the air is being compressed. Yes, the air can be compressed, but it has to be at very high speeds. Air compression occurs at the point at which the speed of sound occurs as well. All right, so when you reach the speed of sound, which is, let's say, for the sake of argument, it's about 600 miles an hour. So if you're traveling in the air at 600 miles an hour, you're going to be traveling at the speed at which sound travels. So you're going to be traveling at the speed of sound. Okay, fine. What happens there? What happens is that once you get to that speed or that velocity, the atmosphere experiences a compression event. And that is the formation of the shock wave. All right, so the shock wave is a result of this compression event. When the shock wave forms and you have reached the compression event, air compresses at that time. So you get atmospheric compression. At about that same time or time and place or within that vicinity of the atmospheric compression event, you get a time compression event as well. Okay, so you're dealing with two events. Now, what has time got to do with velocity? And if you understand your physics, I'm not going to get into this in any deep way, but if you understand your physics, you notice that velocity and time are, in fact, related. The theory of relativity, all right, is the arena or the discovery by Einstein of the theory of relativity points out that time and velocity are, in fact, related or connected to one another. All right, so that kind of opens the door. When you get to a certain speed, time compresses or you experience a time compression event. What does that mean? It basically means this, that the time available to do something is less than the time required. And so you have reached what we call a showstopper. Okay, that's going to stop performance, that is going to render the human incapable of performing at speeds greater than that or even at speeds at that, right? So human performance stops dead in the water and you can't go any further because humans can't think in any kind of meaningful way, and the aircraft wanders off its flight path and disaster ensues from that. In other words, that's the barrier to performance, all right? So if we can get the airplane to go through the barrier, how about the human's ability to perform at such very high velocities? In order to do so, the humans had to, or let's say the human operators, or in this particular case, the pilot, if you will, the pilot of this high-velocity vehicle, had to come up with a different way to think. And that's basically the sum total of the discussion and the sum total of my argument. A new way of thinking had to be uncovered, had to be discovered, if you will, And what is this new way of thinking? Well, that's the whole point of the show, and that's the whole point of the Substack articles that I'm reading on the Substack platform as well. And so we are pursuing this line of thought, this inquiry into a very fascinating area of human performance. We're going to look at this in a way that others have not looked at it. This may be the first time. I'm not actually sure. I would say that this probably is the first time that we have taken a look at it from a human perspective versus a versus a aerodynamic perspective. How do humans think? What is going on in the field of human cognition? And what can we understand about it? Okay, so in order for us to understand it, let's take a look at what others have, or I guess another way of saying this is that within the context of the pilot community, what were others thinking about when they were flying airplanes and they were performing all kinds of complex operations in the air? What can we learn from that experience, and then how can we use that to help us along the way to clarify and codify how to perform during conditions of increased time compression, right? What does that mean? It means that we have to reorder the way we think, okay? Either that or we just say we give up. Okay, we give up, we don't have enough time to do anything, time is compressed too much, and we just give up and go home. Okay, the motto here is either think big or go home. What does that mean by thinking big? It basically means that we're thinking way outside the normal box. Okay, we are way, way outside the box. We have come up with a different way of thinking. A better way of saying that, we have taken a look at human consciousness, all right? Now, I'm going to add a word on the front of consciousness. I'm going to add the word sentient. Sentient means to be self-aware. So I'm going to call it sentient consciousness, which is, in fact, human consciousness or something of that fashion, something of that notion. And from human or sentient consciousness, we go to comprehension. Comprehension basically means that can we comprehend what's going on in our world, in our reality? The comprehension has a lot to do with situation awareness. All right, so we can say that the comprehension or meaningful comprehension or accurate or realistic comprehension is in fact a form of situation awareness. And then we go from there. Once we become aware of the situation in which we find ourselves in, then we have to start making sense out of it. And the way that we do this as humans, normally, and this is often missed, by the way, but I'm going to suggest that this is a good way of doing it and may very well be the best way. After we achieve comprehension, in other words, some level of realistic situation awareness, then we have to then make sense out of everything within our area or arena that we occupy. And that's characterization. We have to begin to characterize certain things that exist within this sphere of awareness or another way of saying it, in the fighter pilot world, we call it a volume of interest. What is our volume of interest? Within the volume of interest, we have to begin to understand what is it that occupies this volume of interest, and we have to give it kind of like names and terms, and we have to characterize it in some form or fashion. It's just not some kind of a nebulous thing. It's actually a thing that does something or other and may or may not have an effect on us and our performance. Remember that we are entering this sphere of reality by performing or doing something meaningful. We're engaged in some kind of a meaningful activity. Right? In this particular case, we're flying through time and space, and we're performing a flight operation. Okay, so we have to be able to understand what are the objects and things and situations and events and give it some kind of meaning. All right, so that's characterization. We characterize the situation that we're in. And once we do that, then we have to conceptualize. Now, what does that mean? Okay, so we have objects moving around, okay? But we have to then conceptualize these, whatever is happening in this arena, in this performance arena. We have to conceptualize it, right? Why is that? Well, in order for us to connect the dots, in order for us to find connections in groups and clusters of things, we have to be able to cluster things. That these are not random articles that are performing randomly without any sense to it. Once we engage in conceptualization, then we create conceptual constructs of the situation. And that conceptualizing is the key to mission success. Right there, that's the key to mission success. Okay, now, I'm going to read the poem, High Flight. Okay, as soon as I can find it here in my stack of things that I have available for this show. I'm going to read the poem High Flight right now, and then we're going to get into it because I'm going to try to answer the question. Now, why am I reading the poem High Flight? Well, because High Flight probably was the first attempt at creating this idea of conceptualizing that which occupies the airspace. Okay. Conceptualizing it. Not identifying the specifics, but identifying what is going on within the airspace or the airborne battle space from a conceptual standpoint. All right. Now, it's my position, and I know this is going to sound pretty radical, but it is my position that the poem High Flight represents not only a nice poem, it is happens to be, by the way, the most famous aviation poem ever written. Okay. But it's more than that. I think that the poem High Flight is a template for how we should think and how we should reason and how we should elevate ourselves to match this wonderful experience. So it's the elevation of the human spirit as well as the ability to think and reason under conditions that are not normal, but are extraordinary conditions or conditions of at the extremes of an extreme portion of reality that humans have now occupied, but heretofore have never occupied, at least not up until this point. All right, so my position is that while the poem High Flight is a great poem, it is more than that. The poem High Flight is the template by which we should engage our intellect to match the conditions that we face when we are flying these high-performance airplanes. Okay. High Flight was written by Flight Lieutenant John McGee Jr., Royal Canadian Air Force. He was flying for the British during the Battle of Britain during World War II. Flight Lieutenant John McGee was a Spitfire pilot. In other words, Flight Lieutenant John McGee, the author of High Flight, was in fact a fighter pilot. John McGee was an American. He was flying for the Royal Canadian Air Force, and he was volunteered for and flew for the British during the Battle of Britain during World War II. He wrote this poem, the most famous aviation poem ever written. It is my position that the poem is not just a nice poem, but it's also a template by which we can use to figure out what is the best way for us to engage our intellect when we are operating under these stressful and difficult and mission-critical conditions. Let me start off by reading the poem. Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds, and done 100 things you have not dreamed of, wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. Hovering there, I've chased the shouting winds along and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. Up, up the long, delirious, burning blue, I've topped the wind-swept heights with easy grace, where never lark nor even eagle flew. And while with silent lifting mind I've trod the high, untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touched the face of God. Okay, so that is the poem High Flight. Now let me take a look at it in various segments. Now, what I'm getting at is this. All right, I believe that this is the template. This is kind of like the warning. This is the bellwether alert to all of us that have chosen aviation as our profession and others as well. I think the aviation industry is leading human thought. It certainly is leading some of the thinking that is going on right now in the field of medical surgery. And so aviation kind of like is a place where we begin our inquiry into human consciousness in a way that has not been done before. All right. So, and this is the template by which we can consider how is the best way for us to perform under these conditions. What exactly is going on? All right. Now, what I'm getting at is this, and this is something that that all of us should be aware of as we consider this poem. And what does it mean, and what is Lieutenant McGee trying to get across to us? Now, these are well-chosen words and phrases, okay? What's the first thing that comes right out in front and just knocks you right in the head? What is the first thing? The first thing when I read this, the first thing that comes out, oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention this, but I start off my book, The Sonic Warrior, with the poem High Flight. Okay, I started off, and for a very, very specific and exact reason. I start off my book with the poem High Flight. All right, the first thing that jumps out at me right away is that there's nothing literal about it. Okay, High Flight is written in conceptual and metaphorical terms. Completely, by the way, almost completely, you could say, well, is it 100%? It may not be quite 100%, but it's pretty close, right? So why did John McGee write it this way? You know, I mean, I'm a writer. I have written, you know, books and articles and poems. I have a poem that I have two poems in my book, The Sonic Warrior, that I have written as well. So I've written poetry as well as lots of other things. But why did John McGee write it this way? And my answer is that John McGee wrote it this way because he wanted to alert us about how we should understand or how we should perceive the world or how what is that about our comprehension that we need to adjust, that we need to consider, or that we need to reorder. What is it that we need to bring with us when we strap on these airplanes and launch into the wild blue yonder? What is it? Okay, we are not going to think in ordinary ways. We're not going to think in ways that we were taught to think while we were terrestrial. Okay, we are non-terrestrial when we go up into the wild blue yonder. We are non-terrestrial consciousness. We are not grounded to the earth. We're not standing on the planet. We happen to be moving about the atmosphere and also possibly moving into areas that we call subspace. We call it space, okay, subspace or near space or up into space. We can move outside the atmosphere if we have the right equipment, and we can come back into the atmosphere. So we're moving, all right? We're moving not grounded to the earth. So we're moving within the air and space arena that happens to be close to this particular planet. Once we get there, we have to adjust the way we think. Why is that? Well, that's just the way it is. Okay, we have to adjust the way we think. And one of the things that John McGee pointed out is that our thinking has to move away from the here and now, what is in your face, and from the literal. Okay, I'm going to call it literal consciousness or literal awareness. What is literally there is not as important as what it means to us conceptually. Once we move from the literal to the conceptual, which is where John McGee wants us to be. So our intellect needs to move away from the literal toward the conceptual. That's where John McGee and that's where I believe we should move our intellect, our consciousness, our ability to conceptualize. All right, so our comprehension has to be adjusted. Okay, we have consciousness, all right? We have what I call sentient consciousness. I mentioned this before. And then we have comprehension, which also enables us to achieve situation awareness. Once we get there, we have to, first of all, make complete sense out of the reality that we're in, and then we have to conceptualize it. We have to create conceptual constructs. So conceptualization is where John McGee wants us to go. Okay, not to the literal, but to the conceptual. Okay, that's the template by which John McGee has created, and that's what I am proposing as well. And that's why I started my book, The Sonic Warrior, with this poem, because we have to be able to conceptualize. That is a missing ingredient in most educational programs and most organizations that you go into. They want to bury our noses into the specifics, into the details. All right, so we drown in the details, and we don't lift our heads above the details to try to understand exactly what is going on from a conceptual standpoint. Okay, so the first order of business here, and in particular, if we are traveling at very high velocities, which I mentioned before, and we have reached the point at which atmospheric compression occurs, time compression likewise occurs. And at that point, our consciousness needs to shift into high gear. Okay, so we have to have a overdrive for our consciousness, and we have to have that ability to shift the consciousness into high gear. Once we get into high gear, then our consciousness begins to consider the conceptual, and the conceptual is not necessarily time dependent. The conceptual is not grounded in the here and now, and it is not grounded on the terrestrial plane, and it is not grounded within any specific parameters of time. Okay, the conceptual is temporally agile, or another way of saying that is that the conceptual relates to or is enabled through the process of temporal displacement. Now, I know that's a little bit difficult to understand, but bear with me here. All right. Temporal displacement means that we're moving along the time horizon mentally. In order for us to fly airplanes successfully, we have to be mentally ahead of the airplane. Okay, in other words, we cannot be behind. We have to be ahead of the airplane mentally. So our mental abilities, or we have to create this mental picture of what is going on in front of the airplane. I used to say that to when I was an instructor pilot and a Top Gun pioneer, I used to say that you had to be 5 to 10 miles in front of the airplane from a mental standpoint. So your mind or your mind space had to exist in front of the velocity vector. Okay, so your velocity vector was this, and your consciousness vector was considerably ahead of the velocity vector. That's what was necessary. Now, how did you get there? Well, you had to unplug the time, okay? You had to unplug the time, so you had to move from the here and now into some kind of a future state. You had to do that, all right? How do you do that? You move from the literal to the conceptual. So you take your conceptual understanding of reality and you move it forward, okay? When you move it forward, you're not grounded by the time that you are now employing what is what I call temporal displacement. You're displacing it forward in time. You're going into a future time. It's actually called projection, and if you want to get into the details of this stuff, I would recommend that you look up the situation awareness model by Dr. Micah Ensley. Micah Ensley is the gal who came up with this idea first, and you can Google it, situation awareness model by Micah Ensley. You can Google it and find it. So it's not hard to find, all right? So within the context of that model, projection is an important aspect of situation awareness, all right? So projection, and it's also called outcome projection, okay? So outcome projection is something that is not grounded to the time in the here and now. It's out there some point in the future. It's out there some point in the near-term future. That's where it is, right? So in order for you to do that, you have to unplug from the literal and you have to move into the conceptual domain. Okay. That's where you need to go. And that's exactly what the poem High Flight is encouraging us to do. Everything in High Flight is non-literal. Okay, there's not one single thing in this poem that is literal. Okay, so I'm going to do a bit of a deep dive into the poem. So stay with me. I don't have a lot of time left, but stay with me. Central to the poem is the phrase, danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings. Okay, that's the core to the poem, High Flight. What exactly is Lieutenant McGee talking about? He says, danced the skies. What does that mean? Okay, I will tell you what I think it means. It means that you actually are performing, in this case, with swiftness and grace. Your performance is being conducted within the context of swiftness and grace. You danced the skies. You didn't fly, you danced the skies. This is In other words, you have elevated your consciousness so as to be able to dance the skies on laughter-silvered wings. What does that bring forth into your consciousness? That brings forth joy and happiness. Laughter, silvered wings. That's a happy place. Okay? We are now moving into a realm of existence in which joy and happiness reside. He also points out in the poem, "Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds." Okay, so he has climbed toward the sun. The sun is an object in our solar system that brings us life. Okay, without it we would not exist. Climbed toward the sun and joined the tumbling mirth. What does that mean? The tumbling mirth. Does that bring forth positive emotions? Of course it does. Of sun-split clouds. The clouds are being split by the sun. Sunward and sun-split. Okay, a light, lightness. We could also say, okay, light and truth. Okay, the light brings forth what is there, the truth. And then he goes on to say, and done 100 things you have not dreamed of. What exactly is he talking about? Well, you are doing things that almost have never been done before, or we could say that. We could just flat out and say that. John McGee, and I will join in with him because I did essentially the same thing as a Navy fighter pilot. I have done 100 things that you have not dreamed of. 100 things that are outside your realm of experience. And because John and I have done that, we have gained, someone would say, well, you kind of stumbled on it. All right, maybe so. But we have gained insight into something really quite extraordinary. We have gained insight to the power of the human intellect to understand and perform in this realm, in this new dimension. He goes on to say, wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. Okay, what does that mean? Okay, we're playfully engaged, right? This is an art form now. We are moved away from the mechanical. Okay, this is now we are operating, we are performing with respect to an art form. This is artistry, if you will. Wheeled and soared. It's also uplifting. All right. Notice the words. Sunward I've climbed. Wheeled and soared and swung high. In the sunlit silence. Okay. Notice, sunward, sunsplit, sunlit. Okay, the sun, light. Okay, talking about light, light brings forth the truth. And then he goes on to say, chased the shouting winds along and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. What a wonderful way to express the joy of flight, the wonder, the excitement, the experience. What a wonderful way to do it. It's amazing. Chased the shouting winds along. Okay. In other words, we are part of the that river of air that exists somewhere in the sky. We are part of that. We are wind-borne entities. We are in the wind-borne arena. And flung my craft, my eager craft. All right, so eager craft. Yes, you're the man machine. You know, you are part of the man machine. Here becomes a single entity. One of the things that we used to talk about when we were fighter pilots, particularly when we got to the point where we were instructing others, right? You had to become one with your machine. The man-machine had to become a single entity. That was so critical. And flung my eager craft. In other words, the craft was there with you. It wanted to perform these things along with you. It was part of you, and you were part of it. Through footless halls of air. What a wonderful way to describe the airborne experience. It is just amazing. Okay, up, up, the long, delirious, burning blue. I've topped the windswept heights. All right, topped the windswept heights where Neverlark or Eagle flew. So way up there in the upper atmosphere. How much time do I have left? Okay, so we're gonna move along to this song by Johnny Denver. Johnny Denver. We're gonna close the show with this song by Johnny Denver called "High Flight." And there it is.
Silver wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling murmur of sunsplit clouds and done 100 things. I've wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. There, I've chased the shouting winds aloft and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. The higher we fly, the farther we go, the closer we are to each other. The darker the sisters and brothers. Up, up, the long, delirious, burning blue. I've topped the windswept heights with easy grace, where never lark nor even eagle flew. And while with silent lifting mind I trod the high untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touch the face of God. The higher we fly, the farther we go, the closer we are to each other. The darker the night, the brighter the star. In peace go my sisters and brothers.
Okay, and the poem ends with this final phrase, sentence, put out my hand and touch the face of God. And high flight relates to and emphasizes the fact that there is, in fact, a spiritual element to this whole thing that humans have discovered, in which we can fly, the wonder of flight, operating in the air, atmosphere, and space. We can fly. And there is, in fact, a spiritual element to this. We'll talk about this later because we're running out of time. But just keep that in mind, all right? So it's a physical, emotional, and finally a spiritual component to this whole thing that we're talking about with respect to flying and flying at high velocities, and recognizing that there is a new dimension of thought out there. All right, that's it for today. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you all next week.